We now begin Maseches Yevamos. This is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph 1:1. And the truth is that this Mishnah is a bit of a doozy. It's a complicated one. I'm going to recommend highly that you get diagrams in front of you to follow this Mishnah. I'll try to provide diagrams in various ways, but depending on how you're hearing this, this is not a Mishnah to listen to in the car or on your jog. You're going to need to have some picture in front of you, pictures in front of you to follow these complicated family trees, no way around it. Okay, but the good news is it's just this first Mishnah, and if you get past this first Mishnah, you'll be well on your way to getting the rest of the Masechta, Bez Hashem. So, we begin. Now, as I said in the introduction, Yevamos, what we're talking about here is, let's say you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, we'll call them, and Reuven dies without any surviving offspring, so then his brother Shimon has a mitzvah to marry through Yibum, or Chalitza, to sever the connection with the shoe procedure, removing the shoe procedure to the surviving widow. And only then, once either Yibum or Chalitza is performed, is that connection that we call Zika, that binds the widow to the surviving brother, severed. Until then, she cannot marry anybody else. Now, our first Mishnah here is going to focus on scenarios where there's a relationship that exists between the surviving brother Shimon and his late brother's widow, which prohibits them to be married. We'll take the simplest example. Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Shimon has a daughter, and Reuven marries his brother's daughter, his niece. So that's permitted under Torah law, no problem. But of course, if Reuven dies and leaves his wife as a widow, and the wife is also his brother's daughter, so you're not allowed to marry your own daughter under any circumstances. As we said in the introduction, the prohibition of marrying your brother's wife is suspended for the mitzvah of Yibum, but that's the only Issacharis which is suspended. So other prohibitions, incestuous prohibitions that carry with it the penalty of Karis, divine excision, are not relaxed or pushed away because of the mitzvah of Yibum. And therefore, the surviving Shimon will not be allowed to marry his daughter. And that being the case, she's free to go. There's no Zika whatsoever. She's Penuy Lashuk. She can marry whomever she wants. So the thrust of our Mishnah is really to answer the following question. At the moment that Reuven dies, leaving one or more widows, are these widows free to marry whomever they want, or is there an existing Zika, a bond that connects the widow or widows to her late husband's brothers, which requires either Yibum or Chalitza to be resolved before she can go on and marry somebody else? So our Mishnah is going to list here 15 different relationships where the surviving brother is forbidden to marry the widow or one of the widows because it's an incestuous relationship and it's an erva. She's a prohibited woman through incest, through a penalty of karis, which makes that the surviving brother, Shimon, can't do Yibum or Chalitza with the widow of his other brother who died, Reuven, and therefore she's free to go. Adding to the complication, that's straightforward enough, is that if there were two wives, Reuven died childless, he has two wives, one of the two wives is a relative of the surviving brother Shimon in such a way that they can't get married. So then just as Reuven can't marry the one widow, let's say because she's his daughter, so Reuven is also not allowed, or the women are not allowed or exempt from, the mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza, so they're all free to go. If one of the surviving widows can't do Yibum or Chalitza with a surviving brother, none of them can. So if those women, co-wives, are referred to as tsaros, a tsara is a co-wife. So just as if one of the wives is patura, she's exempt from doing Yibum or Chalitza, so too are all of her co-wives exempt from doing Yibum or Chalitza with the surviving brother. Now, if there had been three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven marries his brother Shimon's daughter, let's say. And he marries another woman also. So there are these two daughters. We'll call them Rachel and Leah. So, now, when Reuven dies, Shimon can't marry either of them because, let's say, Rachel is his daughter. But if there's another brother, Levi, since Levi is not related to these girls, I mean, they're his nieces, but he's not prohibited from marrying them. So then Levi may marry either Rachel or Leah, and therefore he must do Yib Mor Chalitza with either Rachel or Leah. If he does Yib Mor Chalitza with one, then and only then are they both, or are the remaining ones who didn't do Yibum free, in this case Leah, free to go marry whomever she wants. And of course, if Levi does Chalitza with one of them, they're both free to go. Now, in the event that that's what Levi does, Levi marries, let's say he marries Leah, not his brother Shimon's daughter, unconnected. And then Levi dies without any children. So now there's a mitzvah once again of Yibum that's going to fall to Shimon. And now Shimon has no relationship whatsoever with the widow of his brother Levi. She had been married first to the brother Reuven, now she's married to Levi, but it's not his relative at all. And therefore he could do Yibum or Chalitza and must. Except that since that woman had originally been, this Leah had originally been a co-wife of Rachel, his daughter, and she was at that point forbidden to do Chalitza with Shimon because she was exempt as a tzara of the erva, as a co-wife of his daughter. So she always remains forbidden to him. So in fact, being that she's a co-wife of Shimon's daughter, so then she remains forever forbidden to him, and therefore, in fact, they will not be Yibum or Chalitza. She's free to go. Late Levi's widow, Leah, is free to go because she is the tzara, the co-wife of Rachel, who was forbidden to Shimon because that's Shimon's daughter. More than that, if there was another wife that Levi took, so Levi, in addition to doing, let's say, Yibum with Reuven's wife, Leah, he also took another wife. We'll call her Tamar. So now, if Levi dies childless, not only is Leah exempt from Yibum Mechalitza with other brother Shimon because she is the tzara of his erva, the co-wife of his daughter from the previous marriage when they were married to the brother Reuven, also, Tamar, Levi's other wife, is exempt from Yibum Mor Chalitza with the surviving brother Shimon because she is the tzara of the tzara of the erva. She is the co-wife. Tamar is the co-wife of Leah, and Leah was the co-wife of Rachel, and Rachel was the daughter of Shimon. So since when originally Reuven died, leaving those two wives, Rachel and Leah, at that moment, Leah was prohibited to Shimon as the tzara of his erva. So too, if she becomes a co-wife with Tamar, so now Tamar is the tzara of the tzara, and she's also not allowed, not going to do Yibum with Shimon, and therefore they're all free to go. That is the basic story of our Mishnah here. We'll list 15 different relationships with that scenario, the first being Shimon's daughter. That's the simplest. So here the Mishnah says inside, Chameshus or Nashim, there are 15 relationships that could exist between the surviving brother Shimon and his late brother Reuven's widow that would not only prohibit Yibum or Chalitza, but also would potros tzoroseyan. These relationships would exempt the co-wives that Reuven left behind from doing Yibum or Chalitza with Shimon. And also tzaros tzoroseyan, in the event, like I described, there's also brother Levi, and Levi took on one of the co-wives that are left behind. So then, if Levi dies childless, so then still both the tzara, the co-wife of the original relative, as well as the tzara of the tzara, the co-wife of the co-wife of the original prohibited girl, the erva, they all become exempt. And they're exempt min ha-chalitza or min ha-yibum, both from chalitza and from doing yibum. There's always a package deal. If a woman is exempt from chalitza, is exempt from yibum, and vice versa. Ad sofa olam, until literally the end of the world. What we mean is, if there were, let's say, 10 brothers, so what happens is, let's say, for example, Levi dies with those two wives, like I said, Leah and Tamar. So we said that Shimon can't do Yibum, but let's say there's another brother, Yehuda, and Yehuda takes on one of the wives, let's say not Tamar, but another, he takes on Tamar, has another wife also, and then that other wife, we'll call her Rivka. So if Yehuda dies, still Shimon can't do Yibum or Chalitza with Rivka, because she's the Tzara of the Tzara of the Tzara, and so on and so forth. Ad Olam, Ad Sof Olam, until the end of the world, meaning if there be 100, you know, links in that co-wife chain, that'll all be exempt from doing Yibum or Chalitza. Ve'elohen, says the Mishnah, and these are those 15 relationships. So again, really, I think you need to get a chart in front of you or a diagram from somewhere. I'll try to provide, but you need to, you know, you need to follow along to keep what's going on here. So the first case is Bito, his daughter, meaning Shimon has a daughter. She married Reuven. Since Reuven's now died, childless, leaving over the daughter, we'll call her Rachel, and Rachel is Shimon's daughter. Rachel can't marry her, and therefore she's exempt from doing Yibum or Chalitza, and she'll also exempt the co-wives, like I explained. And similarly, Bas Bito, Bas Beno, cases 2 and 3 are his granddaughters. Shimon's granddaughters are the ones who married and now are widows. Bas Bito means his daughter's daughter. Bas Beno means his son's daughter. They're both what we call granddaughters in English. Can't marry those. Also, the fourth case, Bas Ishto, the daughter of his wife, meaning the stepdaughter, right? So that means that originally Shimon married a woman who had a daughter, okay? That's the daughter of his wife. And Shimon can never marry that girl forever as an erva. But if Reuven, Shimon's brother, does marry her, so then they can get married. But of course, if Reuven dies childless, she remains an erva as a bas bito, his stepdaughter, and therefore she's exempt from Yibum Chalitza and will exempt the co-wives as well. The next case is numbers 5 and 6 are Bas Bana and Bas Bita. These are his step-granddaughters, we'll call them, right? In other words, he has a wife, and the wife has granddaughters, whether through her son or daughter, and those granddaughters are his step-granddaughters, if you will. It's his wife's granddaughters, so he can never marry them, and if that's who Reuven originally married, they won't be able to do Yibum afterwards. Chamaso is his mother-in-law, right? So that means, again, Shimon marries someone, she has a mother. That mother is the one who married Reuven, Shimon's brother. So Reuven marries Shimon's mother-in-law, and then Reuven dies. So again, since it's Shimon's mother-in-law, he can't marry her, so she's free to go. Then you have Eim Chamaso, Eim Chamav. These are the two, I'll call them grandmother-in-laws. Shimon's wife has grandmothers. Both of them he can never marry. So therefore, if Reuven does marry them and then dies, they won't be able to do Yibum or Chalitza with Shimon because they're his grandmothers-in-law. Next, you have Achoso Me'imo, his sister from his mother. This means his half-sister. Okay, now... Okay, this is the first one you really need a chart for. I'll explain it, but you need a chart for this one, case number 10. So Achoso Me'imo means his sister from his mother. So the story is, there are two parents, two people, Avram and Sarah, okay? Avram has a son from his first marriage named Reuven, and Sarah has a daughter from her first marriage called Leah, okay? Now Reuven and Leah have absolutely no relationship to each other. It's just that Avram and Sarah married each other after they had their first marriages and their first sets of children. And therefore, in English, we'd call Reuven and Leah step-siblings, okay? But from the Torah's perspective, they have no blood connection whatsoever. And therefore, they're allowed to get married. Now, after Avram and Sarah, who had Reuven and Leah respectively, get married, they have a child named Shimon. That means that Shimon shares a father with Reuven. And sharing a father, Reuven, means that normally the halachas of Yibum and Chalitza kick in. The problem is that Reuven married Leah. Leah, we'll call him, is the stepsister, but that's permitted. But the problem is that Leah is Shimon's half-sister, right? They had the same mother. Sarah is the mother of Leah from the first marriage and the mother of Shimon from the second marriage. And you're not allowed to marry your sister, even if it's through your mother, like half-sister. And therefore, if Reuven marries Leah, his stepsister, that's permitted. Should Reuven now die childless, so Leah, of course, would fall to Yibam. The problem is she can't marry Shimon, who is a choso me'imo. Leah is his sister, Shimon's sister, through his mother, through Shimon's mother, Sarah, and therefore they can't get married, and therefore she'll be free to go. Okay, the 11th case, achos imo, his mother's sister, also, you need a chart for this one, I think. The story is that there's a fellow, Avram, he's going to be a father, and Avram, from his first marriage, has a child, Reuven. Okay? Then Avram gets married to a woman named Sarah, and they have a child named Shimon. So Reuven and Shimon share the same father, Avram, and therefore, there's the potential for Yibam to kick in. But who does Reuven marry? Reuven, the older brother, from the stepbrother, from the first marriage, Avram's first marriage, marries Sarah, his stepmother's sister, Leah. Okay, now you're allowed to marry your father's wife's sister. That's okay. There's no blood connection here at all between Leah and Reuven, right? Because this is a second marriage between Avraham, his father, and Sarah, his stepmother. So Reuven can and does marry Leah. The problem is, if Avram and Sarah have a child, Shimon, that means the relationship between Leah and Shimon is achos imo, as our Mishnah says, the sister of your mother. It's meaning it's Shimon's aunt. Leah is Reuven's aunt through his mother's side. And you're not allowed to marry your aunt. Achos imo. And therefore, if Reuven dies childless, so Leah, the widow, cannot marry her nephew Shimon, because it's her sister Sarah's son. And therefore, their relationship's exempt, and all the co-wives are exempt as well. The 12th case is the case of achos ishto. That means his wife's sister. So the case here is that you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. They married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. So Reuven's married to Rachel, Shimon's married to Leah. When Reuven dies childless, so Shimon can't do Yibam with Rachel, Reuven's widow, because Rachel is his wife Leah's sister. There's a prohibition from marrying your wife's sister during her lifetime. So therefore, Shimon can't do Yibam. And of course, again, if Reuven had other wives, those of the tzaros would be exempt as well. The 13th case is Eishes Achiv Me'imo. That means that the would-be Yavam Shimon is going to be prohibited to marry this widow because she is the wife of his brother from his mother's side. And again, you need a chart here. This is a complicated one. So the setup is you have two parents, Avram and Sarah. Before they married each other, they had children of their own. So Avram has a son, Reuven, with some other woman. Sarah has a son, Levi, with some other man. So Reuven and Levi have no relationship whatsoever. Now, Avram and Sarah marry, and they have a child, Shimon, which means that Shimon is, in English, a half-brother with both Reuven and Levi, but Shimon's related to Reuven through his father, therefore there'd be a Yibam situation potentially. He's related to Levi through his mother, which doesn't have any Yibam implications, but it does have the restriction of the erva restriction of marrying your brother's wife if it's your brother through your mother's side, which is our case here. So what happens? The case is that after you have these three boys, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, again, Reuven unrelated to Levi, different parents on both sides. So Levi gets married to some woman. We'll call her Leah. She has no relationship whatsoever to anybody in the picture. Okay? When Levi dies, he leaves over this widow, Leah. No Yibum yet. Nothing about Yibum. Could divorce Leah just as easily. So Leah is now looking for a new husband. She marries Reuven. That's okay, because Reuven and Levi have no relationship whatsoever. Now Reuven dies, and he leaves no children. So now a Yibum situation emerges. But Reuven's brother Shimon, who would normally do Yibum for Reuven, can't marry Reuven's widow Leah because she had previously been married to Shimon's brother through his mother's side, Eishes Achiv Me'imo. And even though Yibum pushes off that one issue of your brother's wife, because necessarily so, it does not push off
the Isser of your brother's wife through your mother, since there's no Yibum situation that's ever relevant. That one only does Yibum, like we said before, through his brothers, with his brothers through his father's side. So therefore, Shimon can't marry Leah because she is Eishes Achiv Me'imo. The 14th case is Eishes Achiv Shelohaya Ba'olamo. Your brother's wife, in a scenario where you were never alive when your brother was alive. So the situation is like this. You have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven marries his wife, and then he dies childless. So now, the normal case of Yibum would be that Shimon should do Yibum on Reuven's wife. We'll call her Sarah. Okay? That's normal. But before that happens, we have another child, Levi, who's born. Now, Levi being born after Reuven dies means that, A, we know he's not relevant for the question of Yibum, but B, therefore, the widow Sarah is forever forbidden to Levi as Eishes Ach, his brother, late brother Reuven's wife. He can never marry her. And since she becomes Aser now, there's an issue that will persist. So that means, now, if Reuven dies, leaving Sarah over, and if Shimon takes her with Yibum, and then Shimon dies, and he leaves no children, so the only brother left is Levi. Levi's supposed to do Yibum. The problem is he can't do Yibum because the widow Sarah is already forbidden to him as Eishes Achiv Shelohaya Ba'olamo, the wife of a brother of his that he was never alive at the same time as, meaning, like we said before, Levi can't marry Sarah because she's his late brother Reuven's wife, and therefore he can end that without any issue of Yibum that ever kicked in. Okay, so that's the case. Levi can't marry Sarah, so she and the co-wives go free. Okay. 15th case of Kalaso, one's daughter-in-law. So the situation is you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Now Reuven has a son, Yitzchak. Yitzchak marries Sarah. Sarah, therefore, is the Kalaso, the daughter-in-law of Reuven. And Reuven can never marry her, of course, while his son's alive. But even after the son dies, she's forever forbidden to him as his daughter-in-law, Kalaso. So, if Reuven does die, let's just say in a conventional sense, don't forget the issue of Yibum at all, so Shimon, Reuven's brother, can marry her. No problem. Not his daughter-in-law. Now, if Shimon dies and he has no children, so now Sarah should fall to Yibum. The only brother is Reuven. Reuven can't marry Sarah because Sarah is Kalaso. Sarah is Reuven's daughter-in-law from the first marriage, and therefore, again, she and her co-wives are exempt from Yibum. So now the mission repeats itself, summing up, saying, Hare Elu, all of these, meaning that list of 15 relationships, Potros Tsarosein, Vatsaros Tsarosein, Menachalitza, Menayibum, Atsofa Olam. All these women are exempt, and they furthermore exempt their co-wives, and their co-wives' co-wives, as explained before, from both Chalitza and Yibum, Atsof Olam, no matter how many brothers there are in the chain, all like I explained before. Now, that's not like the mission, it's to repeat itself. So the question is, why is it doing that? So the truth is, this is coming to add an extra case that you would have thought perhaps is a problem, but is not. And also, the initial counting of the number 15, which was superfluous, also comes to add another case. Those two cases are, I'm just going to not deal with them now, because they're not the cases, and they're complicated. I'll tell you the names. One is called Tsaras Mema Enes. We'll go into Miyun shortly and have the 13th chapter of the Masechta to deal with that. And one is Tsaras Machzir Grushaso, the co-wife of one who remarried his divorced wife. Both those cases I'm not discussing for now. You'll forgive me. Way over time and so. They're there. Okay, the Mishnah's not done. If you recall, the way I framed the Mishnah is that we want to answer the question, at the moment that Shimon dies, and we look at his family tree, is Reuven, Shimon's brother, obligated in doing Yibum with the widows who are left behind? Or is a relationship that prohibits Reuven and therefore exempts all the co-wives? So our Mishnah is now going to say that let's say Shimon had originally been married to two women, one of whom was on the list of 15. Let's call it now Reuven's granddaughter. Okay, so we know if Reuven's granddaughter is one of the two widows, so then just as he can't marry his granddaughter, all granddaughter and co-wives are all exempt from Yibum. Now, the Mishnah is going to say here that that's true, but if we get that relative, we'll call it the granddaughter now, we get the granddaughter out of the picture prior to the death of Shimon, so then Shimon just leaves one widow unrelated to Reuven, and therefore, even though at some point she was a tzara, a co-wife of an erva, a relative of Reuven, at the time of death of Shimon, she's alone. There is no erva that prohibits or that gets in the way to make it that she is exempt from doing Yibum, and therefore she would be obligated in doing Yibum with Reuven. So the question is, how could we, quote-unquote, get that relative, that forbidden erva, out of the picture? So our Mishnah says there are really four ways. Two of them are really obvious. The first is Shimon could simply divorce the wife. If Shimon divorces Reuven's granddaughter, let's say, so then he leaves just one widow, and that widow would do Yibum with Reuven. Same goes if she dies. If the erva, the first wife, Reuven's granddaughter, who married Shimon, she predeceases Shimon, she dies first. So when Shimon dies without any children, there's only one wife left. That's the only wife in the picture, and again, that wife would then do Yibum with, or Chalitza with, Reuven. There are two other ways that we can get her out the picture. And those two ways are where we essentially retroactively annul the marriage. We say that Shimon might have thought he was married to this granddaughter of his brother, but, or whatever, relative, but he wasn't. How could he do that? So there are two possible ways. One is if it turns out that she is an Ilonus. An Ilonus is a woman who never reaches sexual maturity. She never goes through puberty, and therefore she can't bear children. If she can't bear children, so then the original marriage between Shimon and this woman was actually made under false pretenses. Shimon married a woman thinking he could have children with her, and it turns out that she never reached maturity, and therefore she never could give birth to any children, and therefore the whole marriage is a mekach taos, it was a mistake, and therefore retroactively invalidated. We say it never existed. In such a scenario, so the Ilonus gets out the picture, meaning the marriage never happened. That could happen, the truth is that could happen during his lifetime or even afterwards of Shimon. The point is the marriage never was a marriage. So that being the case, there's only one woman left because we got this erva out the picture, and then that remaining woman could do Yibum or Chalitza with Reuven. The other way is Miun. Miun, and we'll get more into it much later in the Masechta, Miun is where you have a girl who's a minor and she's widowed, she's orphaned by her father passing away. She does have a mother or a brother, and the Torah was concerned that a girl without a father to protect her would be abused, whatever the story is, and therefore the rabbis empowered her brother or her mother to accept Kedushin on her behalf, to marry her off, essentially, when she's a minor. Now, the reason for this enactment was to protect the girl. So if it turns out the girl's not happy with this arrangement, this is for her benefit, she is allowed to reject her rabbinic husband. And that rejection is called miyun. Lima'en is to reject. So if she gets, let's say, when she's 10 years old, she gets married to this fellow rabbinically. She got married here to Shimon. Shimon has a co-wife, and the girl who was 10 years old is the granddaughter of Shimon's brother, Reuven. Now, if she decides she doesn't like Shimon, and therefore she does miyun, it has to happen during his lifetime, of course, while they're married. So then she retroactively says, this marriage wasn't a marriage. I never was married to him. I never agreed to this. I never wanted to be a part of this. And she can undo it. And by undoing it, it's as if she were never married at all to Shimon. And that being the case, she's out of the picture. Okay, we'll learn a lot more about miyun later on. But the point is, our Mishnah says there are those four ways where if we get the erva out of the picture, so the remaining tzara co-wife is eligible to do yibum. And that's what the Mishnah says inside now. V'chulan, and for all these scenarios, if the forbidden one of the 15 relations gets out of the picture prior to death, leaving the other co-wife, for example, mesu, she dies, o me'anu, or she, at least they, do Mion retroactively undoing the marriage, Oshnis Garshu, or Shimon divorces his brothers Erva during his lifetime, during the lifetime of Shimon, Oshinimtu Ilanios, or it turns out that the relative is an Ilanis. The word Ilanis, by the way, an isle is a ram. And another word for ram is like Dachar and Zachar, which is like Aramaic words, etc. So, and that's like sort of the word for male. So it's sort of like a backhanded way of saying she sort of lacks all femininity. She's like masculine in a way. It's sort of a backhanded way of saying that. And therefore, because she's not feminine enough to, she has lacks the ability to give birth. That's what Ilanus is. So if she turns out to be an Ilanus, in those four cases, Tsarosein, Mutaros, then the remaining co-wives, so there's no reason why they can't marry Reuvenel, and therefore they could do Yibum or Chalitza. Just one small point. As far as the word in the Mishnah, it says that it turns out, Shenimtu, they discover that she was an Ilanus. So then we'll say retroactively the whole thing was a mistake, like I explained. The truth is, and this is what the Gemara points out, even if it wasn't that they discovered it, but actually, like in other words, like miraculously after the fact, but even if it says Shahayu, that is to say that she was an Ilanus, so I mean, we're not talking Mekachtos necessarily. Let's say Shimon went into the marriage, and he married Reuven's granddaughter, his brother's granddaughter, knowing she's an Ilanus. So there's no mekachtos here, right? Because he knew what he was getting himself into. Even so, she wouldn't restrict the other tsaros. The reason why is because, as you said in the introduction, with learning from the pasuk, the word tailor, that she has to be able to give birth. A woman who can't give birth is not eligible for doing yibum or chalitza, because the whole point is to perpetuate the name of the deceased having a child and so on. And that being the case, since she's not relevant to the whole parsha, the topic of Yibum or Chalitza, she's out of the picture, and therefore any remaining co-wives are back in the picture and could do Yibum or Chalitza. Okay, we're nearing the end here of this Mishnah, and the final part of the Mishnah, it just says, it's almost like a PS. By the way, the Mishnah concedes that there are, on the list of 15 that we had in the beginning of the Mishnah, there are three relatives that actually can't be considered to be Ilanios nor Mion, because they're adults. They're mature adults. How do we know that? So let's look at the Ilanios first. So these women had children. If they had children, clearly from the context of the Mishnah, then they obviously cannot be an Ilanus because they had children. That's the point. So that's what the Mishnah says here. I ve'iata yechol lomar. You just simply can't say. Bechamaso, with regarding one's mother-in-law. Remember, Reuven's mother-in-law married Shimon. Now, she could fall, of course, to Reuven, but then that would be an exempt, one of the 15. But it's impossible that the mother-in-law is actually a Ilanus, because she gave birth to Reuven's wife. Same goes, Uve'em Chamaso, the mother of his mother-in-law. She's a grandmother. Uve'em Chamav, or the mother of his father-in-law. Also, she's a grandmother. In those cases, you can't say Shenimtsu Ilanios. They turned out to be infertile, is Ilanios, they never reach maturity. It's a hormonal thing, by the way, I should speak out, presumably, because they gave birth. And nor can you say, Shemeanu, that they did Mion, this rejecting, because remember, Mion only is effective while the minor girl is still a minor, before 12 years old. After 12 years old, she has a conventional marriage, like turns into a conventional marriage. So a girl under 12 just can't give birth, and therefore these women who did give birth obviously were older than 12 when it happened, therefore Mion is just not on the cards, no way to reject once she becomes a bas mitzvah. Okay, with that we finish this first Mishnah, and really we are over the hump, so don't, if you made it to the end, call a kavod to everyone. Now even the Mishnah itself will take a Mishnah or two just sort of to catch his breath and reconsider what we just said.